Good evening, everyone. My name is Maury Scanlon, and I'm an alcoholic. It's a real privilege to be here in Miami in spite of being sick all week. I've enjoyed it very much, and I'm very grateful to God that I was able to make this meeting tonight. Now, we have a sheet here to follow. It's hard for me to follow instructions, but I will. We have first a moment of silence in gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 35 years, which we follow with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. As this meeting is laid out, we have three speakers of 30 minutes, and as you know, it's a two-hour meeting, and I was told as a chairman that I could have, if I wished, the rest of the time, which I don't intend to take, because I come from a country where leaders lead and speakers speak. I didn't know I was that bad. But we do have a little thing we do out there, and I say a little thing, it's a big thing to me. Because a little over 22 years ago, by the grace of God, I come off a skid row in Phoenix, Arizona, took a long walk to the north end of town, and I had a young Jesuit that was able to explain a little to me about alcoholism and being a disease, and he gave me back a little bit of hope that I'd lost for a long, long time. And after talking to him, it made it possible for me to have a couple of AAs call on me there in Phoenix. They told me they shared their strength, experience, and hope with me a little that night. Now, it hasn't been necessary for me to take a drink since that day, which I take no credit for at all. But instead, I give it to people that I've met in Alcoholics Anonymous, to God as I understand Him, and also to how it works in our big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And this has always meant a lot to me because it was explained to me that night, even as rum-dumb as I was, that it came from the first 100 people that maintained sobriety 4 years after Bill, our co-founder, got sober. And they got together and wrote this book, and it's in past tense for visiting people tonight or newcomers. And I'm going to read that portion of Chapter 5 to you tonight. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find Him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked His protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if He were sought. Our first speaker this evening comes from up around North Carolina. He's a fine gentleman. I had the privilege of meeting him when I was guest speaker at the Southeast Conference some 3 or 4 years ago. And it's people like this we always like to remember and call our friends. So I give you now Dave.
Hi, you all.
Hi.
You know, when I arrived at Alcoholics Anonymous some few years ago, you told me that my main dilemma was lack of power. And tonight I have another dilemma, and here lately, involved in these programs, I find myself faced with the same situation. And that is this problem that I'm asking myself right now, do I have to go to the restroom or not? And, we'll find out in a few minutes, I'm sure. Every time I stand up before a group, and I've told this story several times, and tonight I think it's appropriate because it relates to a story to me that I heard back in Alcoa, the country, years ago. It seems as though they had a state convention in they had one of these long-winded speakers. And this fellow gave us talk on the 12 steps, the 12 traditions. And after about 2.5 hours, he got into the three leggers of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, they will leave. And after about 3 hours, they begin to leave. And after about 3.5 hours, there was one fellow left on the front row. And the speaker was just dying to get through then to find out what was going on. And why he stayed. And so he finally wound her up and he ran down from the podium. He says, "I want to ask you one question. He says, everybody left except you. Now, why did you stay? And he said, hell, I'm the next speaker. And it's good to be here. I'm an alcoholic, and my name's Dave Cook. I'm a member of the Big Book Group in Raleigh, North Carolina, which I think is the best group in the whole wide world. And if you don't think that about your group, I suggest that you find another group. By God's grace, and because this program works in my life, through the help of an understanding sponsor who led me with a kind but firm hand, and through the love of a loving wife that I found as a result of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, through many people like you, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink of alcohol since the day I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was September the 12th, 1957. And for this, I'm very grateful. I'm also grateful for the fact that I found Alcoholics Anonymous at the age I did. And this is no reflection on the older member that comes into the program. I was 29 years of age. And if you're young or if you're old, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous will work for you if you want it bad enough. I know that today. This program, to me, has given me many benefits. These things that I call marginal benefits, such as peace of mind, some serenity, and maybe some material things. But most important of all, this program has given me my sanity back. And there is a sane alcoholic I find now that I don't have to run anymore. I don't have to lie anymore. I don't have to cheat or steal anymore. And most important of all, I don't have to sober up anymore. And by God, that's what this thing's about. The gap from where I came and where I am today has been a long wait. And sometimes I'm just completely amazed. And I never want to forget where my sobriety came from. One drunk talking to another drunk, and that's where it began. And I had to go through a lot to get to Alcoholics Anonymous. I went through the same thing as you did. I don't have time to tell you my story puke by puke, but I can tell you this. I've been to that black pit of hell that all of you have been to. And I don't think I have it in me to go back through it again. But I'm one of the lucky ones. The reason I'm here tonight is because of what Mary read a while ago in chapter 5, the first line in the big book of chapter 5. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. That simply means to me that if I follow the directions of the program, that I can maintain this sobriety that I've found. And that's the only reason I'm here tonight. I've followed the directions. I took my first drink when I was 16 in college, and it was all fun drinking. And I don't know when I crossed that invisible line, but it came somewhere from the time I finished school and in the time that I was teaching high school and coaching high school athletic teams, mainly in basketball. Somewhere in there I became an alcoholic. It's not important to me today when I became an alcoholic. I think I became an alcoholic when I reached that point that when I took one drink, I could no longer guarantee my behavior. And that's the way I feel about it. My alcoholism progressed rapidly. I went through jails, hospitals, nice hospitals in the beginning, and finally the insane asylum on account of my drinking. And at no time until a few days prior to my arriving to Alcoholics Anonymous, at no time did I see myself as I really was. And this is the thing that I don't understand about alcoholism today. Is the inability of the alcoholic to see himself as he really is at his worst moment. And this is the way I was. I had a mother that loved me. And because of her love, I just about died. I was protected. And because of her protection, I was just about died. And these things are the things that coupled with my obsession. It finally led me to Alcoholics Anonymous. Being in these hospitals, I can recall them, and you can too. I never want to forget my first trip to the insane asylum because of my drinking. Oh, they were nice in the beginning. I went the first time to a place in my state that I commonly referred to as Dix Hill. And my favorite expression is, I too found my thrill on Dix Hill. That's where I went for the cure. And at no time when I arrived at this place did I understand the problem that I had. And you'll have to understand this. When I got there, I saw nobody my age. And I began to look around for somebody my age, and I didn't see anyone. And I began to hear some of these older fellows talk. I went through the same things you did at these places. I remember being locked up in these padded cells where they took my clothes away from me. And I was allowed, the only thing that I could do is have these running fits, and when I got through with those, they would turn me loose, and I walked the hall. And I would listen for something. And one night in a conversation with some older men, I began to hear some of them talk why they were there. And I heard one man say, I'm here because my wife put me here. And I heard another man here say that I'm here because I'm an alcoholic. And from the very time, and this was the first time I ever heard the word alcoholic, and I knew exactly what it meant. But what was built into me at that time, I began to resist the word. And I knew exactly what it meant. And to make a long story short, I had to go to this thing, this same place, 5 times in 6 months on account of my inability to see myself as I really was. And the last time I went to Dixie Hill, I went back to the bug part of the nut house instead of the whiskey part. And there's a distinct difference in case you're interested. And I found out something about straight jackets. And I found out how you live better electrically, too, on this trip. And this is quite an experience. Like an old boy says back at home, you know, says, I always felt better after I had one of them things. You damn right, you'll feel better after you get over one. Always felt better. And in no time did I see this. And eventually, because of my alcoholism, I had to be put behind bars. And never did I know, as old Sidney says back at home, never did I know all those beer cans and all those beer bottles that I threw in those ditches, someday I'd have to come back and pick them up, and I did. And I got to this place, and I did some things I didn't think I could do. And when I had to leave, I was ashamed. I was ashamed to leave. No one in my family by this time would have anything to do with me. And I was scared to get back out in society. I really was. But you have to leave. You have to leave. And I went back to the only place I had to go again, back to my mother's home. And here's a woman who by now was scared of me because on my last drunk I tried to take a life and knew nothing about it. And this woman gave me another chance to try to help her son, still protecting me. And through a chain of circumstances, I was eventually sought a job in several states and was employed up in Virginia in another school system, a fresh new start. After going through what I had in the previous years, and my alcoholism had just begun, I guess. And this was the beginning of the end for me. And I got to Roanoke, Virginia a few days later when I took this job, and I started drinking again. It's going to take one drink, but about 2 pints. Just one drink. And again, the same thing happened in my last drunk is the one I like to talk about, my last drunk. I hope I never forget it as long as I live. My last drunk was my worst drunk. I never experienced the things that I did on this last drunk before. The fear, the loneliness, the terror, the hurt, the just complete loneliness, and I can't explain it. I can't describe it. And I never want to go through this feeling again. In middle way of this drunk, my good mother got in touch with me and gave me the greatest gift she ever gave me in my life since I was born. When she kicked me out of her life, and wished me luck, and says, you're no longer my son. And she meant it. And for the first time in my life, I had no one to turn to. No one. I knew one man in this city. One man. And he had an interest in me. And this was the superintendent of the city school. And this man found me on a Sunday morning on Skid Row. And that's where I had to go. You don't have to go there to get to AA. But this drunk did. I had to go there. Today I thank God for it. I was this type of drunk. And he was a man who had no knowledge of Alcoholics Anonymous, but he had a friend that did, that got in touch with AA in Roanoke, Virginia. And this is where I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. That first day, when I got to that club room, and I was carried up those steps, and they began to look me over, and you will look them over, you know. And I was standing over to the side, and an old gentleman, who I later found out was 82 years old, called me to the side, and I'll never forget what he said to me. The same thing that was read in chapter 5 a while ago. He said, son, says, I want to tell you something. Says, all you've got to do is listen to these people and you never have to be alone again. You never have to be alone again. And my God, I really think that that's what kept me sober my first minute, maybe my first hour, maybe my first year, that I didn't have to go out there anymore. They told me so. And they proved it that night because it stayed with me. And I went to my first AA meeting that night. I don't know what went on, but I do remember those people after the meeting getting my hand and saying, Dave, we love you, and we know what's wrong with you. None of them asked me why I drank. They all said they loved me and they understood. And that was the beginning of my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, it got real good there for a while. I got physically sober in a period of a few months. No man has ever had a better introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous than I did through my sponsor. And my sponsor's here tonight, and I thank God for it. But I was one of these people that after I've been sober a year and a half and things began to come my way, and I found the girl that was later to become my wife, and this woman has been through more hell than my first wife did, and she's never seen me drink, never seen me take a drink, because she's seen me try to grow up in this program, which I'm still trying to do. And I began to get smart after about a year and a half sobriety. I began to be the backbone of the group, you know. The backbone of the group. Oh, it wasn't long. It wouldn't embarrass me one bit if somebody grabbed me by the arm and said, sit down, you said enough. I've been asked to do this several times. Gave a talk one night on how not to slip. I know it's unheard of, but I gave one. And that was the night he came up and got me and said, sit down, you said enough. And I really thought that, really, I got a little bit too much power for him tonight, you know, talking above him. And as the old timers will do, one grabbed me as I sat down on a humility row. And it's amazing what these old timers, the winners I call them, well, you know, when they first say these things to you, you take them as a compliment. But when you think about it for a while, it ain't exactly that. And this man says, you know something, Dave, says at the rate you're going, you're going to be the next governor of the state of Virginia. Let me tell you, I believed in that night. I really did. I really did. What happened to me, Senator, was this. I got too busy in the program. I got to the point that I would go 200 to 300 miles to make a talk, but I wouldn't go 1 mile to listen. When you get like this, you better watch out. Something's going to happen. This is the way this drunk got in the program of AA. I began to be around a bunch of people in AA that were not staying sober. They began to tell me things that I needed to do. And the main thing they were telling me to do was take what you want and throw the rest away. And when I got through picking these 12 steps apart in the program of art, I didn't have much left. I really didn't. Oh, I'd been a soul saver in a few months there, going around saving souls, you know. Nobody was getting sober or staying sober. And I couldn't understand it. Well, hell, I didn't have a message to carry. I know that today. Because I didn't know anything about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And these wise men began to see what was happening to this alcoholic. And again, I thank God for these people that were here before I was. The ones that stayed sober. And they told me what was going to happen to me. My sponsor, and a few other men sat me down one day and said, Dave, you're going to get drunk. And this is a hell of a thing to be telling the backbone of the group. He's going to get drunk. But they told me. And, of course, the conversation led on into other things. And finally, he says, I advise you one thing. That's to get honest with yourself. In spite of a year and a half sobriety, you've never gotten honest with yourself. And we advise you to get a hold of these 12 steps. That's the only chance you've got. By George, I left that meeting that afternoon and went back to that room where I stayed in. A rooming house, where six other alcoholic men and myself stayed there together. And I never made a talk that I don't mention these six men because they gave me much. I seen two of them die on account of going back to the body. And they told me what I had to do. And I went back to that room and shut that door, and my real intentions were to resign from Alcoholics Anonymous. Never heard anybody doing it, but I was going to send them a written resignation or resign. But he had told me something I hadn't heard in a long time. He said, when was the last time you thanked God for this day of sobriety? And it had been a long time. And that night I got out on my knees and I prayed to a God I knew nothing about. I really didn't need him. I was God shy when I got here. And I thought God was more or less a question mark in the sky. I really did. And that night I was able, as a result of a juvenile prayer, I was able to walk in a bathroom and look at myself for the first time in my life in a mirror and really know what I was. That I was just a speck on this universe. That I was born into the world and someday I'll die and soon be forgotten. And the only way that I had a chance of staying sober was through Alcoholics Anonymous, because I tried everything else. And I had to go back to my group the next night, and I had to eat a lot of crow. And that was the night I became a member of the clique in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's like I've heard said before, the clique is the people. If you want to know who the clique is, get there before the meeting starts, when they start sweeping up the floor, putting out the ashtrays, making that coffee. And that's what I started doing. And I still do it. I find that I have to. And I rejoin Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've rejoined Alcoholics Anonymous 10 times since that time. And I got a hold of the thing that they told me I had to, which was the 12 steps of the program of AA. It was just a matter of circumstances a few months later that I had to move back to North Carolina. And the truth is what we're talking about, was to get a divorce from my first wife. And I went back to the state of North Carolina and I ran into a man there. And my sponsor arranged this, I believe. The man got hold of me, who was one of the first 100 in Alcoholics Anonymous. He's dead and gone now, Tom Burrell, and some of you knew. And this was the man that rammed the big book down my throat. Because I was still one of these drunks that liked to ask people questions to let them know how smart I was. And Tom would say, read the book. And I began to read the book. And he helped me immensely. And I got active in AA, and I've been trying to live these steps since that time, one day at a time. And I'm here tonight to tell you that there's not but one of them that I can do 100%. That's the first one. The rest of them, I just have to be with them, one day at a time. If there's a new person here tonight, or if there's a man or woman that is quarreling with himself or fighting with himself about this business of Alcoholics Anonymous and living in the program, and you're wondering what's going on, I simply ask you to do one thing, just like I had to do. Get down to the truth of the whole thing, because I really believe the core and guts of this whole program is the truth. Or more briefly, get honest with yourself. Because I've seen enough in my time in Alcoholics Anonymous, not only to believe, but to know that there is a power behind this program that stands ready to help you and set you on the road to recovery if you're willing to help yourself. I've seen it in you and many people just like you. A lot of my friends in AA call this the man upstairs. I choose to call him God, the God of my understanding, the God that I found through you by your love for me. And I've come to know that love is the most powerful force on this universe. I really believe today that I was loved sober. I really did. And after all, when a new man or woman walks in that door for the first time, what have we got to offer them except love and understanding? That's really all we've got to offer, love and understanding. And that new man or woman has the same right to the same thing that I have today. I no longer recognize them as an alcoholic when they walk in. I recognize them as a human being. As a human being, a person who deserves the same thing that I've received from this program. And I think it's my responsibility. My responsibility is this God-given sobriety that I've been granted to try to help the suffering alcoholic. No matter whether he has been in the program for a while and had trouble, or whether it's a new man. Because you see, there was a day that a man took me by the hand and said, Dave, I love you, and I understand. And you don't have to be alone in it. And every time I go see a sick one, all I've got to say is, thou but for the grace of God go out. That could be me. That could be me. And this I've learned from you. This I've learned from you. I'm here tonight because my group let me come. That's the truth. And I represent my group. And my group, I find that I have to walk like I talk. And the very fact that I'm here tonight is because of my group activities. And my AA starts in my home group. And that's the reason I think it's the best. I find that I get something at my home group or a group meeting anywhere that I can't get anywhere else. If you're getting your icing on the cake by being here, that's good. But if you're finding things that you don't find at home in your group here this weekend, you better go back and inventory your group as far as I'm concerned. That's the way I feel about this thing. I wouldn't be here tonight if it wasn't for my home group. And sponsorship, my God. I don't know about you, but after I got sober and had some sobriety, I began to find out something that I didn't know before. After I'd been sober a year and a half, I found out I need sponsorship worse than any time I'd ever need it, because I began to think. I began to think. And the man was there to talk to me on my level of understanding. And if sponsorship is carrying someone to a meeting and dropping them off and wishing them luck, a hell of a lot of cab drivers down here in Miami Beach that are good sponsors. It's a little bit more to that than me. You got to become a part of that person as far as I'm concerned. And that's the reason I'm here tonight. I thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. I thank God for people like you. I really do. I haven't made the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I really haven't. Maybe someday, when I'm dead and gone, if I'm still in the program and active, maybe you can say Dave made the program then, but not until then. I've got a long ways to go. It's a daily process for me. And through these steps, by trying to practice them to the best of my ability, I know that I'm backed up, as it says in our book, that I'm granted a daily reprieve, contingent upon my spiritual condition. And ever since I began to try to do this thing this way, things have begun to get better for me. I don't know exactly where I'm going, but you told me where I could go. And I know where that road leads to. I really do. I really think tonight, as it says, that I have really tried to abandon myself to God as I understand God. I have really tried to clear away the record to the past. I've tried to give freely what I found, and I really think tonight that I'm trying to walk that road of happy destiny in the spirit of the fellowship, just like it says in our program. And I know where it leads to. It leads to my Father's house, and that's where I want to go. To me, to drink is to die, to be in hell on earth. To stay sober is to live and experience heaven on earth. And that's where I want to be. I don't have to drink anymore. You told me so. You told me so. One thing that I want to mention before I sit down, and that's my mom. It took 9.5 years for this to come to pass. When I got sober, she didn't believe it. She wouldn't have nothing to do with me for a period of time, and no one could reach her. And she began to despise you for what you'd done to me. She didn't understand the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. No one could reach her. And this gnawed at my guts since I was sick. I'd ask my sponsor, what's going to happen to me? And he says, keep practicing this program to the best of your ability, and this too shall come to pass. And finally, after 9.5 years, it did come to pass. And I didn't ever think it would. I never thought it would. And I know tonight that the promises that were promised to me when I arrived here can be fulfilled, because some of them have been. But most important, I know now that God has been doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. I know that tonight. And I want to tell you something. I love you for just letting me be a part of this fellowship. And I want to thank you for never letting me be alone again. I don't have to be alone anymore. And in closing, I'd simply like to say this. Because of the fact that you've given me a living program for a living problem, I simply say one thing. Let us be careful what you and I do or say, for we might be the only copy of the big book that someone else reads. Thank you, and God bless you.